Hello there, and welcome to the 10th episode of Dev Conversations by SwiftToolkit.dev. Today I have the pleasure to host a co-worker of mine. After 4 years working together, we finally managed to find the time to record it after a few months that I've been wanting to. So thanks for accepting.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Sure. As always, I would like to ask for a quick introduction of how you got into programming and how it all started for you.
Cool. So if you don't know me, my name is Shai. I guess today I'm most known for some open source work around RxSwift and combined related async stuff, some books I've had the pleasure of writing, and lectures. I guess it all started early on. I got a computer very early in my life as a gift for Passover, actually. I kind of played with it since, and then I guess started with web development, actually, like HTML, PHP 3, all these good old languages. And after like about 10 years of doing that, I worked for a company where I used to do like backend development, and we had a contracting company that did the iOS client, and they went bankrupt. So my boss came to me with a CD. Yes, they had CDs at the time. And he said, "Congrats, Shai, you're now an iOS developer." And since then, that's what I've been doing. Been about 14 years now, which is quite a lot, I guess, around iOS 4.
Yeah.
And that's more or less it, I guess. That's how it all started.
And how did you get into RxSwift and became a maintainer?
Yeah, that's a really cool question. I think that when I just started off in iOS, it was a lot of Objective-C, and I used to love all of these like AF networking, as these huge open source projects by Matt Thompson, all these guys, Ash Farrow, and I used to really like follow closely and want to do my own things as well. So I started by contributing. I like released a few smaller open source projects in Objective-C. And I was like very excited with seeing apps using it because there weren't so many open source projects back then. And I guess I always like was very much drawn to architectures, like I find it very enjoyable to just play around with Swift and back then Objective-C and try to find the next interesting thing to structure apps for bigger teams and smaller teams and for myself. And that's kind of how I stumbled upon functional reactor programming. And reactive extensions in general. And then I found Reactive Cocoa and RxSwift. And it kind of started as like being a passionate consumer of it and really enjoying it. And I was very much into like my work with Ray Wunderlich. So I used to do a lot of technical editing for books and stuff like that. And got drawn into doing open source in a similar way, like trying to make code standards better and trying to make it more swifty and more modern and making sure it's maintained well and have great documentation. And Krunoslav Zaher, who's the creator of RxSwift, we really worked closely together almost as partners on these projects. And after a few years, he moved on to work for Google. And he felt like I was in a really good shape to just take over the project. Because at that point, like for those at least 2 years, I was basically maintaining it myself. And since then, it's been I've been solo maintaining it for I guess 6 or 7 years now. Yeah.
And how did Combine affect maintaining RxSwift?
It's interesting. I think that when I don't remember which dub it was when they announced it, but I remember watching it and first of all, like really being surprised by them basically not mentioning Reactive Cocoa or RxSwift or any of these other libraries, but it was fine. I guess that first thing we did, like I did, was write down all these operators. And like at the time, we had a book from Ray Wunderlich about RxSwift. And as we, like all of us, saw the lectures, we were like, wow, this is like really, really similar. So in like 2 or 3 months, we already had a book out about Combine. The first ever, like the first Combine book to be released was really successful.
Because the ideas and concepts, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah, exactly. The operators and publishers is like observable. So we're very lucky to have that knowledge and being able to apply it to Combine. It was almost the same concepts. So yeah, it was surprising, but also like good overall. I think that it's great because before it was a bit niche to do reactive programming, and then Apple blessed it, and it became this thing that everyone does. And it also forced, like, we create another organization called Combine Community, where we create more open source project for Combine,
and
try
and
bridge
the cheat sheet.
Yeah, true. So we also did like a Rx Swift to Combine cheat sheet and like a blog post, and basically try to bridge the gap, because Rx Swift was very mature and had all these capabilities, and Combine was very young and missed all these things. So yeah, also released Rx Combine, so it made it easier to bridge observables to publishers and vice versa. So I guess overall it was a great project. I'm kind of sad that Apple basically didn't add anything to it since they released it. It basically was dead on arrival, I think.
And now with concurrency, it also, first of all, doesn't match all the models.
Yeah, and all the ergonomics you get, I guess, that, like, with Swift 5.5 at the time, when Swift Concurrency was released, it was, from one side, it was cool, because we were like, oh, finally, we can use a weight on stuff. It was cool. But then, when we were looking at async streams, or, like, the comparable of publishers, it was like, how do we merge things? How do we combine latest things? It was like, it missed all these things. And also, what you called sync in Combine or subscribe in Rx Swift was a for loop, which is nice when you have one, but it was very difficult when you have a lot of async streams. But I think that even up until today, it feels like there is still a huge gap there, like a lot of stuff missing. They released async algorithms, which is nice, but also not a single commit to it since December 2023. So it's interesting. I'm kind of interested in where they're going to take it this year or next year, because I feel like, okay, if you're telling us this is the blessed way, then you should also give us like the full tool set to enjoy.
Yeah, and also talking about Combine and concurrency, if you want to use them together, you probably need to put some pre-concurrency, add pre-concurrency annotations.
That's another weird thing. I think that when Apple released Swift Concurrency, they didn't add concurrency support, definitely not like targeted or complete concurrency protection. They didn't do any of that for the existing stuff. Like even a notification center isn't like sendable, and all of the combined publishers aren't sendable as well. They're not concurrency safe. So it's very confusing as a developer stepping into it, like what's the right tool to use. Yeah, but I think there's still a lot of potential there. I think that it's been like a natural step to add like concurrency, like generally a concurrency model, and what can go across which thread boundaries and the thread pool and all these things. It makes a lot of sense, but just missing a lot of, like, I kind of feel like we're building the bridge as we're walking on it, in a sense.
That's true. Yeah, and going on that direction, I feel that by far one of the episodes that had the most views and listens was with Matt Massicot, where we talk a lot about concurrency. And I feel that there's a lot of fear, or the sensation that I'm feeling this all the time, that I'm lacking behind on concurrency and many teams. What are some tips that you can give to teams and developers that feel this way as well?
So I think it's a really good question. I think that Apple has done, similarly to when they released Swift UI, they like gave us this great technology, but didn't really provide us with a lot of standards on how we should use it. So those standards are very unclear, but I think that also like telling us just put main actor and everything and stuff, it's not like a standard. I think that...
But now there are some compiler changes.
All right. So in I guess with 6.1, there's finally like default isolation, which is great, I think. Was very, very sorely missed. And also like new non-isolated options. But I think still it's like you don't know when to use what, and the diagnostics are still very confusing. When you hit an error or a wall, it is very difficult. For example, just like a weird API quirk that I noticed it a few weeks ago, but also bumped into it today, is like you have async stream and you have the protocol async sequence. And it's supposed to be generic over element and failure, but being able to return an any async sequence generic over them is only supported in iOS 18 and above. And I guess it's because they didn't make it a primary associated types in those earlier releases, but now it's like a bone in the throat. It's like you can't use use it in very expressive ways, and you have to use the concrete type, which are way less flexible. So yeah, I think Apple are trying, like the entire concurrency team at Apple are trying to fill in the blanks and make it more ergonomic and more user-friendly, but still feel like still a very long way to go. And also ties into the fact that Swift has become a general system language and not just a language tailored to iOS. So now there are way more concerns. You have like consuming and borrowing, like stuff that you barely use in the iOS world and non-copying and all of these things. But outside of iOS, they're like very useful, used in Go, used in other language, and Rust. So it's really interesting to see how this like Swift story evolves, in a sense, especially since Blattner left at the time.
Yeah. So to wrap up this question, like if you, what would be your go-to resources?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, like in reality, and reality means like not being a solo developer or like you work in a team, I think it's a mix of everything. I think that what we've been trying to do here at Monday.com is that we try all new code to be written with a new standard with Async Await and Async Streams. We have some helpers and stuff, but also we have good bridging between all of the layers. So if you have an old module that has like Rx Swift, then in Rx Swift, I think 6.5, we've added a way to go from observable to an async stream, and also a way to await on a single value. So it's easy to bring the old observables into the concurrency world, and we also have the same bridgings with combine across all of the layers. So if we, in the bigger team, would make a feature usually in one isolated concurrency model, and it simplifies things. But I think if you start learning today, then you probably learn Async Await, and you probably also learn a bit of Combine because you still need it for something.
Swift like UI.
I mean, if you're targeting under iOS 17, then you're going to use the observable object. You're going to use published. That's a current value subject under the hood. Mm-hmm. So you're going to want to know how to use it. But if you're targeting iOS 17 and above, then it's probably less
the
of
macros.
An issue.
Yeah,
you've got observable macro and all the observation framework. It's much more powerful.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
And changing subjects a little bit, let's move to what the website is about, which is Tooling in Swift. Last year we were in
Swift Heroes, I guess.
Yeah, Swift Heroes 2024, and we met Pedro and Marek from Twist.
Yeah,
which is a great tool that we also use here. What are your thoughts about Tooling in Swift and your experience? Did you have any tools that you wrote that you are proud of, or maybe even contributions to Twist?
Yeah. I think that, first of all, I really love this story about like that we met them and everything, and we also like bumped into people from Bloomberg, Nick Lockwood, and all of these heroes of ours from back then. I think when people ask me like why do you even do open source, then usually do it for like altruistic reasons, but it's fun that you get to meet people like from all over the world. I remember that I did this talk in a conference called Nextdoor in San Jose. And all of a sudden, I met one of the contributors to Arc Swift from Tokyo or something, another one from Germany. I was like, you're just names, you're just GitHub handles. And all of a sudden, like, they're real people.
Yeah.
And it was the same way with the Twist folks. It was really cool hanging out with them. We're like proud users, both of us proud maintainers. We're also like supporting them. Like financially, we're contributing to the project from the company, which is something we're super excited to do. That we have the option to do. So that's like amazing. And I think for me, I always loved tooling in general, but I think that Swift is a very interesting language to write tooling in, and it also gets better all the time in that end. It was 4 years ago, four or 5 years ago, I was at Get, which is like a different company. We released this open source project called Prism, which is a CLI written in Swift. And it was pre-Async Await, obviously. So you had to like constantly have a run loop so it doesn't stop the app or something like that because you can await stuff. But it was still very, very fun because you could like have all of your models shared across the CLI and like another tool, and it's all of the like this language you love and enjoy.
A macOS app, for example.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a macOS app, or even if you have like another iPhone app that integrates somehow with your project. Like in this case, it was a project that took I guess design tokens from Figma and design
Sketch.
Metrics, yeah, and Sketch and Figma eventually, and like converted them to agnostic code for Swift, Kotlin, Web via templating engine. And it was really fun to work on. And it was really fun that they let me do it on the company dime, basically. And yeah, also did a bunch of like a bunch of talks on it, even in DroidCon, which was fun. I felt like a Trojan horse in an Android conference talking about code written in Swift. So yeah, I think it's really cool and it's really fun to be able to take this language you really love and build tooling you really love. Yeah, and it's getting better and better every day. We await and with new constructs coming to Swift language and yeah, and more like deploy areas for web servers. It's very cool. Very happy with the progress there.
Yeah. And from an old topic, which is open source, to the latest hype, AI.
Yeah.
As time goes by, it's inevitable, right? We cannot. It's here, and it's affecting our day to day. And if you just force to close your eyes, we can miss a lot of stuff.
Right, definitely.
I'm also feel lagging behind MCPs, many concepts. How do you feel things are gonna be for coders in general? And what are you doing in order to get prepared for this new era, or what are you focusing to learn?
Yeah, it's great questions. I think that first of all, we're going to be witnessing more and more acronyms. So we have, not just AI and MCP and RAG and a lot of tools that are forced into new acronyms. So we have a lot of new terms to learn. But with the joke aside, I guess that my thought of it is that initially, like everyone, I was worried of, is it reliable? Is it going to take all our jobs and all of these things?
Is it pure hype? Or?
Yeah, exactly. Is it pure hype? Is it actually going to be useful for us? And I guess a minute and a half later, or like a very short time after these thoughts, it became extremely powerful with more open AI model, more Anthropic models. To the
and
point that
it's evolving so fast.
Yeah, it's extremely fast. I think that having like 6 month cycles or 3 month cycles to new models that are like 10x more parameterized, more capable is absolutely insane in terms of innovation. If you even compare it to like to Apple that have like yearly cycles, so it's like it's a completely different like a train. They're like on different release trains and different, you know, access to the consumer who is the developer eventually. And also, like, AI isn't just developer-centric, but I think it's, like, a huge market for them. It's also, like, an entry point for AI, in a sense. I think that for me, in the day-to-day, I'll split it into two things. Like, first of all, I guess it's the web and backend area, and then it's the iOS area. I think that I've been able to be way more productive and capable, even, with languages like TypeScript and Rust and even Ruby, because there is just so much data out there that these models are trained on. Like if you open Claude 4 now, I think a few days ago I went to write a URL preview feature for one of my apps. So you need to build an endpoint of the preview, you need to make a table to store the previews, link them to the messages, all these things. I basically asked Claude in an existing Next.js code base to do it in one shot, and it did it 95% correctly. I then asked it to split it into meaningful commits and re-review its own code, and it was extremely well done. You also know, I guess, Peter Steinberg, who used to do PSPDF kit and kind of went off the radar. He's like back to building because it kind of sparked this thing in him, and now he's like running
four developers
exactly. He's running,
serving
you. He says he's like his limit is the amount of screens he has at this point. He has like a bunch of screens with cursors running with agents, each of them with their own spec mission that they're building. It's absolutely insane. And in counter to that, I guess that the amount of knowledge in the iOS world that these models are trained on is still very lacking.
Yeah. And for example, even SwiftUI. SwiftUI was launched, 2019?
Yeah, like 5-6 years ago, but also there was like a lot of changes. Like, I think it's very fair to compare. You probably remember the big migration from Swift 2 to Swift 3. So I think it's very fair to compare that pain to Swift UI. It was like, wow, you can do anything, and then you can do some more things, and then it breaks, and then you can do some more things, and it breaks again. So it's very similar to that journey.
So how this affects AI?
I think it affects AI that it has a lot of data, but not all of it is relevant, and it causes it to hallucinate more and give you less meaningful results. And also, it isn't as effective yet, and I emphasize yet because I think it's just a matter of time. It isn't as effective in doing really large pieces of work yet. I know that Apple are like wanting to release a big, you know, big development tool in enhancements this year, like as based on their partnership with Anthropic. But still, it's very, very lacking, and it is a bit annoying, especially if you look at like, you know, the Google keynote and everything, all the AI stuff they've added into tooling, and their even on-device models are extremely powerful. So it kind of feels like we're at the iOS community a bit behind in those senses. Yeah, but still can do very powerful things. I mean, tests are like the obvious use case. If you give it an existing test, even written in Swift testing, it's basically able to replicate the way you do the tests and do it in a really nice way, getting you 90% there. So,
and how do you make sure that you're still relevant to the market?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think being relevant means you're always using the latest tooling, right? Like whatever is around the corner, you need to be on top of it. You need to make sure you're staying ahead of the curve. So it means if it's easy to be like, oh, this is not a thing and I'm not going to deal with it and I'm going to get to it one day. And then when everyone are using AI, you don't know anything. So I think it's critical to play with it. And even if it doesn't help you yet in your day-to-day, which is very difficult because I think even if you're using ChatGPT, it's extremely helpful for your day-to-day. You need to understand at least what it can do and what it can't do, and maybe like try to figure out what are the latest things. And I think we also are lucky that we work at a company that have a lot of R&D and people are playing with things all the time. We get to be exposed to these things. I think if you were just like an iOS firm, it would be much harder to stay up to date because you're not as exposed to, you know, to new things happening around you. So staying relevant means keep learning, like it was before AI, right? Before AI, you want to stay relevant. You need to be on latest Swift, latest iOS, know all the new things, know all the latest paradigms, and be professional in your craft. And AI is also a new craft that we need to own and add to our tool belt, to our skill set. Yeah, I really believe that.
Yeah, that makes sense. And to finalize, you're flying a few days to WWDC 2025. Yeah. What are your top three wishes?
My first top wish is it would become a real conference again and not a keynote-only event
with pre-made videos.
Yeah, and really awesome community events throughout the week. By, you know, there's Community Kit and you know, the Revenue Cat Bashes and all those things, which are amazing. I really, this is like the main reason a lot of people even fly out there without a ticket.
Right, it's really about the people.
One more thing, also a great confidence airing there. But I guess wish list in the technical.
Yeah.
First thing, and that's been on my wish list for the past 7 years, better Xcode. That doesn't, like, the first thing is obviously a more AI-capable, AI-focused model for Xcode. I would like, my dream would be like Apple coming out and saying, hey, we took all of the code we have inside Apple and put it in a private model that Claude knows or something, and now you have this extremely capable model that knows all the stuff that Apple has available. It isn't even available outside, but you get these new superpowers because right now we're very much lacking behind. And I think it was also very underwhelming last year, if anyone was there, like all these huge promises about Swift Assist and like Siri, App Intents, like nothing was released. None of these features work. And it's painful to see as an iOS developer. You know, we've been doing it for like 14, 15 years. It's like a part of you. It hurts to see that it's going this way. And I'm super hopeful that this year is going to be extremely good and corrective. Yeah, I agree. So that's like the top one. Second one would be Swift UI, like more Swift UI parity with UIKit, but also more stability. I feel like Swift UI has like the hugest issue that I feel is that it is not only not backward compatible, it's also not forward compatible. It breaks in either direction, and it's very unpredictable. Like I always say, it's like a really big brush, and you can draw really nicely, but then when you want to do the fine painting with small brush, it doesn't know how to do that.
Yeah.
So it's the control stuff, for example, but it's also like just APIs don't work. Like you have this scroll position API, which is nice to know when the item is on screen, off screen, but it works differently on iOS 17 and 18 and even on 16 where it's supposed to be supported. So That's frustrating. I kind of hope there is a plan for that, because I feel it is just not there yet. It would be extremely interesting to see. And I guess third is not software. I really love to see like a cool new hardware leap in some sense, like maybe a cheaper Vision Pro to make it more accessible to consumers, maybe glasses. I don't know, things that don't make sense, but maybe. I'm hopeful still. Yeah. Those would be like my big three. And yeah, I'm going to hit all the labs and badger Apple engineers to ask them to look at all my bugs that I collect and all my feedbacks that I collected throughout the year for sure.
Nice.
Oh, cool. Better async algorithms, better async streams. Yeah, I'm saying this too. Sorry, fourth item on my list. Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. So safe travels.
Appreciate it.
If people want to find you on the web.
Yeah, if you want to find me, I'm a freak for PC, for the digit. Anywhere, basically. X, Mastodon, GitHub, obviously. And yeah, if you're going to DubDub, feel free to like reach out. I'm there for like a week and a half, so if you want to hang out, meet, feel free to reach out and we'll set up some time for a good old coffee. And yeah, we did not even talk about my coffee addiction. It's very maybe on the next
we'll
one.
We'll leave that for next time. For another episode. All right, thank you so much, Shai.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.